All right, so today we're diving into a world that's, well, it's fascinating for sure, but it's also got a lot of debate swirling around it, and we're talking about bioresonance. Now, bioresonance, it's this idea that all our cells, they have these like specific frequencies that they vibrate at, and then there are devices out there claiming to pick up on these vibrations and use them to diagnose illnesses and even treat them.
Yeah, and this idea, it's actually gained quite a bit of traction,
Yeah, it has.
especially in certain circles.
Exactly.
But that's exactly why we're taking this deep dive,
Yeah, to
right?
really figure
We
out
need to separate the
why.
science from the speculation, the fact from the fiction.
Exactly. And I mean, one example that always comes up is the Biocom device. They claim it can spot all sorts of things, from Lyme disease to a whole range of other health issues.
Yeah, they make some pretty bold claims about what this device can do.
Yeah, and the price tag on some of these devices, it's pretty eye-opening.
Oh, for sure. We're talking thousands, even tens of thousands of euros in some cases.
Yeah, 100,000 even for some of the top-end models. So that alone makes you wonder, right?
It definitely does. I mean, that kind of investment, it really begs the question, is this legitimate?
Yeah, is bioresonance really backed by solid science?
Or is it more about belief and, anecdotal evidence?
Right, and that's the puzzle we're here to try and solve. Now, when our team started digging into this, they actually hit a bit of a roadblock right off the bat.
Oh, really? What happened?
It wasn't easy finding practitioners willing to have their devices tested.
That's interesting.
Seems like not everyone in this field is eager to have their tech put under the microscope, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of reluctance, it does raise a few eyebrows, doesn't it?
It does. But we did eventually find a bioresonance therapist who was willing to share her perspective and let us observe her practice.
Okay, so what was her story?
Well, her office, it was in this kind of interesting location, right next door to a bunch of conventional medical doctors.
Oh, wow. Talk about a contrast.
Yeah, it was pretty striking.
So what led her to bioresonance?
Well, she actually had this really personal story. Her son, he got seriously ill, and conventional medicine, they just couldn't figure out what was wrong.
Oh, wow. So she was kind of at her wits' end.
Yeah, it sounds like it. She said his condition was just getting worse and worse.
So she started looking for other options.
Yeah, she was desperate for answers, and I guess she felt like she had to explore everything, And that's how she stumbled upon bioresonance.
Okay, so this wasn't just a professional interest, it was deeply personal for her.
Absolutely. And it seemed like that experience really solidified her belief in bioresonance. She said it would be hard for anything to convince her that it doesn't work.
Yeah, you can imagine how powerful that personal connection would be.
Yeah, I mean, when you feel like something has actually helped your child when nothing else could, it's got to be hard to question that.
Absolutely. And I imagine that kind of strong conviction is a big part of why people get drawn to bioresonance.
Yeah, for sure. So right away, the investigators wanted to put these diagnostic claims to the test.
Okay, so how'd they go about doing that?
Well, they had Lukasz, one of their team members, go through a diagnostic session. Now, Lukasz was feeling perfectly healthy at the time, which is an important detail here.
Because that raises the question of whether bioresonance might sometimes find things that aren't actually there.
Exactly. So they wanted to see if the diagnosis would uncover any hidden issues, things that weren't causing any symptoms.
Makes sense. So walk me through what this diagnostic session was like.
Okay, so the therapist, she talked about establishing an energetic field before she could start the reading.
Okay, but energetic field, that's not exactly a term with a clear scientific definition in medicine or biology, is it?
No, not really. And that right away raises questions about what exactly this diagnostic approach is based on.
So what does she do next?
Well, she had this sensor and she was passing it over these vials.
Vials.
Yeah, like little glass containers. And she said each vial, it supposedly contains the frequency information for a different pathogen.
Okay, so like a specific frequency for a specific bacteria or virus
Yeah,
or.
exactly. But the thing is, the key tool in all this wasn't the sensor.
It wasn't. What was it then?
It was a biotensor.
A biotensor.
Yeah, it's essentially like a pendulum, a weight on a string.
All right, so how does a pendulum factor into diagnosing illnesses?
Well, according to the therapist, the way the biotensor moves, it tells you whether there's a problem.
Okay, so like which way it swings indicates something.
Exactly. She said if it moves vertically, up and down, that means there's no issue related to that particular vial's frequency.
Okay.
But if it swings horizontally, like side to side, that's a sign of a health problem.
Hmm, interesting. And what did the biotensor reveal for Lukasz?
Well, the diagnosis, it was pretty significant.
Okay, what was it?
Lyme disease.
Lyme disease. Wow, that's a serious condition.
It is.
It's spread by picks, right?
Yeah. And it can have some pretty nasty long-term effects if it's not treated properly.
Right. So how did Lukaschuk react to this diagnosis?
Well, considering he had zero symptoms, he was understandably skeptical.
Yeah. I mean, if you're feeling perfectly fine
yeah.
and then someone tells you you have Lyme disease, you'd probably be a bit doubtful.
Exactly. So his immediate thought was to get tested the conventional way.
To confirm or deny, right?
Yeah. He wanted to see if a regular medical test would back up the bioresonance diagnosis.
Yeah, that makes sense. So we have this situation where a seemingly healthy individual is diagnosed with a serious illness using this bioresonance method.
Right.
And now he's going for traditional medical testing to see if it lines up.
Exactly. And we'll get to those results later in our deep dive.
Okay. But before we move on, let's talk about this biotensor a bit more.
Yeah. Okay.
It's obviously a key tool in a lot of bioresonance practices, so the investigators were really curious about how it's supposed to work.
Right.
What kind of explanations did they get from the therapists?
Well, the therapist who diagnosed Lukaszo, she described it in terms of electromagnetic fields.
Electromagnetic fields.
Yeah, she said that the patient emits an electromagnetic field.
Okay.
And so does an electrode that's part of the system.
Hmm.
And these two fields, they supposedly interact somehow.
Okay.
And that interaction is what makes the biotensor move.
I see. So if the organ being tested is healthy, the biotensor moves vertically.
Yeah.
But if there's a blockage or an issue, it swings horizontally.
Right. But here's the thing. They spoke to another therapist who had a slightly different take on it.
Oh, how so?
Well, this therapist, he talked about the biotensor moving because of his own feeling.
His feeling.
Yeah. He said he could actually feel the biotensor being pushed away from the patient if there was a problem.
Mm, so it's like a subjective sensation for him.
Yeah, exactly. Like something he senses.
Yes.
Rather than a clear objective measurement.
Right, right. So we have these two different therapists explaining the biotensor in these different ways.
Yeah.
One's talking about electromagnetic fields interacting.
Right.
And the other's talking about a personal feeling.
Yeah. And that already starts to raise questions about whether there's a consistent objective mechanism at play here.
Yeah, for sure. It makes you wonder if it's more about the interpretation of the person holding the biotensor than a reliable physical phenomenon.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So the investigators, they wanted to see if they could test the physics of this biotensor themselves.
Okay, so how'd they do that?
Well, they went back to their base, you know, away from any therapist or any potential influence,
mm-hmm.
and they set up this controlled experiment.
Okay.
They used a gold electrode.
Mm-hmm.
And since the biotensor had reacted to the Lyme vial for Lukasz, they had him be the subject again.
Okay.
But the key thing here, they wanted to eliminate any hand movements from a therapist,
mm-hmm.
so they secured the biotensor in a film tripod.
Ah, so it was held perfectly still.
Yeah. So the idea was to isolate the electromagnetic fields if they were the real driving force behind the biotensor's movement.
Right. So if the biotensor swung horizontally when exposed to the Lyme vial frequency in this setup, then it would support the idea that it's responding to some objective electromagnetic signal.
Exactly. So they carefully positioned the biotensor in the tripod, aimed it at the Lyme vial, and waited to see what would happen.
Okay. Nothing.
Nothing.
No movement.
Huh. So the biotensor didn't react at all.
Nope. Not the way it had when the therapist was holding it.
Okay, so that seems to challenge the idea that it's simply responding to electromagnetic waves from the vial.
Yeah, it does. When they told the therapist about this, she, Danka, offered an explanation.
Oh, what did she say?
Well, she said it might be because of how firmly the biotensor was being held in the tripod.
The firmness of the grip.
Yeah, she pointed out that she usually holds it very loosely.
Okay, I mean, that's a fair point. The way you hold something could definitely affect how it moves. Right, so the investigators tried to replicate that loose grip. They had Peter, another member of the team, gently swing the biotensor over the Lyme vial.
Oh.
They even put the vial on a book to keep it steady.
So they were trying to mimic the therapist's technique as closely as possible?
Yeah, but even with a loose grip, the biotensor didn't swing horizontally.
Huh. So again, no reaction.
Nope. So at this point, it seemed pretty clear that the biotensor's movement wasn't due to some independent electromagnetic wave coming from the vial.
Yeah, it really seems like the person holding it is playing a role.
Exactly. Which means that this central diagnostic tool, it might be more subjective than objective.
Right, because if the movement is influenced by the person holding it, then their own beliefs, expectations, even unconscious biases could be affecting the diagnosis.
Absolutely. Now, the therapist, she still maintained that she could feel the electromagnetic field even if the tests didn't pick it up on their own.
So she's saying it's something she senses, even if it's not measurable with instruments.
Yeah, which again highlights how subjective this method is.
Right.
And one of the investigators made a really interesting point. He said that maybe the biotensor is working like a dowsing rod or a pendulum.
Like those things people use to find water.
Yeah. The idea is that the person holding it, they're acting like an antenna, subconsciously influencing its movement.
Huh. So it's not the rod or the pendulum itself that's detecting something. It's the person.
Right. And it might be the same with the biotensor. The therapist might be unintentionally guiding its movement without even realizing it.
Yeah. That would mean the diagnosis could be swayed by the therapist's own beliefs, even if they're trying their best to be objective.
Exactly.
Okay, so we've talked about the biotensor and the questions surrounding its reliability.
Yeah.
But now let's turn our attention to the main event, the Biocom device itself.
Right, the device at the heart of all this.
So what's the supposed science behind it? How is it supposed to work?
Well, the basic premise actually starts with a valid scientific point. Electromagnetic fields, they do exist in and around our cells.
Right. That's established science.
And they play a role in all sorts of physiological processes.
So that part is solid.
Yeah. But here's where things get, a bit shaky.
Okay. What's the leap?
The claim that each cell and even each disease has its own unique vibrational frequency within these electromagnetic fields.
That's a pretty bold statement.
It is. And it's a statement that would require some pretty solid evidence to back it up.
Right. So how are the manufacturers able to measure and record the specific frequency of a disease, like Lyme disease, and then somehow imprint that information into a vial?
That's the million-dollar question.
It is. And without a clear explanation of what that frequency even is or how they're capturing it and storing it, it's a leap of faith, really.
Yeah, it is. Now, there's this historical figure who's often cited by bioresonance proponents.
Oh, yeah. Who's that?
Royal Rife.
Royal Rife.
Yeah, they consider him like a pioneer in this field, going all the way back to the 1930s. The story goes that Rife, he built these incredible microscopes that could supposedly observe the effects of electromagnetism on microorganisms.
Interesting.
And he claimed that he could then use this special generator he invented to target these bacteria with specific frequencies and destroy them.
Wow, that's quite a claim.
It is. But when the investigators dug into it, they couldn't find any concrete evidence to support these claims.
Really?
Yeah, and there's this whole controversial story about his lab being raided, his documentation being seized.
Huh, so it's kind of shrouded in mystery.
Yeah, and this lack of verifiable evidence, it kind of fuels this conspiracy theory that's popular among bioresonance proponents.
Oh, what's the theory?
Well, they say that the pharmaceutical industry, they were threatened by Rife's work.
They saw it as a threat to their profits, basically.
Exactly. So the theory goes that they had a hand in suppressing his research.
It's a classic David and Goliath story, isn't it?
It is. Now, the investigators did find out that Rife was a legitimate scientist back in the 1930s. And there was supposedly this big dinner celebrating his discoveries.
Mm-hmm.
But what's weird is that later on, many of the people who were supposed to have been at this dinner, they denied ever meeting Rife.
Ooh, that is odd.
It is.
Yeah.
So it adds another layer of uncertainty to all this.
Yeah, it makes it hard to separate fact from fiction.
Exactly. The bottom line is, despite all the stuff you can find online about Rife, the details are pretty murky, and there's no solid, verifiable evidence to back up those big claims.
Right. So while his story might be intriguing, it doesn't really provide a strong scientific basis for bioresonance as it exists today.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's talk about the Biocom device specifically.
Yeah.
This is the one that's most widely used in Europe, right?
Right.
Now, they say it operates on a different principle than Rife's frequency generator.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like it faces some of the same fundamental challenges in terms of physics.
Yeah, it does. The first Biocom model, it popped up in Germany back in 1987. And there's even this story that the founder, Hans Brüggemann, he was actually surprised by how popular the device became.
Really?
Yeah. So, you know, that raises the question, is this just a cleverly marketed device?
Right. Could it be capitalizing on the ideas of Rife and others without actually having any solid scientific backing?
Exactly. And the investigators witnessed a demonstration of Biocom diagnostics.
Oh, okay.
They saw a therapist using these vials, again, supposedly filled with the frequencies of different organs,
mm-hmm.
and she was using them to test an investigator.
Okay.
But here's where things get really interesting, and it raises some serious questions about the device itself.
What happened?
Well, the therapist, during the demonstration, she claimed that she could actually test organ function just by having the patient touch their finger to the Biocom.
Wait, so no sensor, no nothing?
Nope. Just a finger on the device.
And she said she was getting similar results as when she used the sensor.
Yeah.
Okay. That's pretty wild. I mean, if a diagnosis can be made with just a finger touch, then what's the point of the whole elaborate device?
Exactly. It makes you wonder if the sensors and all the internal workings are even necessary.
It does.
Now, it's important to note that the therapist said the device is still needed for the therapy part.
Okay, so they use it to transmit frequencies back to the patient.
Yeah, they say it sends good frequencies and inverts bad ones back into the body through these treatment pads.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. But again, from a physics standpoint, it's hard to see how that would work.
Yeah, the idea of inverting a complex biological frequency and having it target just the disease without affecting healthy cells,
mm-hmm.
it's a bit of a stretch.
Right. There's no clear scientific mechanism for how that kind of targeted energy transfer would happen.
Exactly. Yeah, personal testimonials. They're a big part of the bioresonance world.
Mm-hmm.
The investigator spoke to this woman in Austria, Maria.
Okay.
And she swears by bioresonance. She says it helped her with her own health issues.
Mm-hmm.
And now she uses it on her horses.
On her horses.
Yeah. And her whole practice, it's built on word-of-mouth referrals.
Okay.
And she even did this little demonstration where she seemed to diagnose a problem with a horse just by using her hands.
Just by feeling its energy or something?
Yeah, something like that.
Oh.
And these kinds of stories, they can be really powerful, right?
They are. It's hard not to be moved by someone's personal experience, especially when they're so convinced that something has helped them.
Right. But we have to be careful here.
What do you mean?
Well, there's this thing called the placebo effect.
Oh, right. The placebo effect.
Yeah. It's this well-documented phenomenon where people's symptoms can improve just because they believe they're receiving an effective treatment.
Even if the treatment itself doesn't actually do anything.
Exactly. And this belief, it can have a really strong influence on how people feel.
And it's not just subjective, right? It can affect actual physiological markers, too.
It can. So when we hear these testimonials, it's important to consider how much of the improvement might be due to this placebo effect.
So could it be that the positive results people experience with bioresonance are at least partially, if not entirely, caused by their belief in the treatment?
It's definitely a possibility. Now, yeah. There's a counterargument to that.
Oh, what's that?
Well, Maria, the woman with the horses, she kind of hinted at it with her demonstration.
Okay.
The argument is that the placebo effect doesn't really apply to animals.
Because animals don't have the same conscious expectations as humans?
Right. They don't go into a treatment thinking, this is going to make me feel better.
So if an animal shows improvement after bioresonance, the argument is that it's more likely to be a genuine physiological effect.
Exactly. However, even in animal studies, the observer's expectations can still play a role.
Right. The person interpreting the animal's behavior or symptoms might be biased.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have these individual experiences that are really hard to explain without considering the placebo effect.
Yeah.
Did the investigators come across any other personal accounts?
They did. They spoke to this guy, Maruf,
mm.
who credits bioresonance with curing his eczema.
Eczema?
Yeah. He said he had really severe eczema.
Okay.
And nothing in conventional medicine could help him.
So he turned to bioresonance.
Yeah. And his father, Professor Behan, he's a skeptic.
Okay.
He doesn't believe in Biocom.
But he acknowledges that traditional medicine couldn't help his son.
Yeah. He admitted that they had tried everything and nothing worked.
Okay. So what was Maru's experience like?
Well, he went to this bioresonance therapist for a consultation.
Mm.
And the therapist recommended specific foods instead of supplements.
Okay.
And Maru, she said that helped him.
Okay.
He also claimed that the Biocom diagnosis accurately identified other issues he had.
Like what?
Like a neck problem and some temporary vision changes when he stood up.
Things he hadn't even mentioned to the therapist.
Yeah. And the biggest thing, his eczema, it cleared up completely.
Wow. So he attributes all this to bioresonance.
He does. Now, it's important to remember that a lot of skin conditions, like eczema, they have a psychosomatic component.
Meaning that psychological factors can play a role.
Yeah. Stress, anxiety, even just the belief that a treatment will work, those things can influence how severe a skin condition is.
Right, so it's hard to say for sure whether the improvement was due to the bioresonance itself or the psychological effects of believing in the treatment.
Yeah, it's really tricky to disentangle those things.
Makes sense.
The investigator spoke to this psychologist, Mariana Podgel, all about all this.
Okay.
And he pointed out how certain factors can really amplify the placebo effect.
Like what?
Well, he mentioned the environment of the clinic.
Okay.
The authority of the practitioner.
Right.
And the information they give to the patient.
Like if they explain things in a way that sounds really convincing.
Yeah. And he also said that people often turn to alternative therapies when they're disappointed with conventional medicine.
So they're already more open to something new, something different.
Exactly. And that can make them even more susceptible to the placebo effect.
Right. Because they're hoping for a solution. They're looking for something that will finally work.
Exactly. So all this adds another layer of complexity to understanding these personal experiences.
It does.
Okay, so remember Lukasha and his Lyme disease diagnosis?
Yeah.
Well, he went to a specialized medical clinic to get tested the traditional way.
Okay.
And the results were pretty definitive.
What did they say?
They came back negative
mm-hmm.
for both chronic and acute Lyme disease.
Negative.
Yeah. In fact, they found no antibodies at all, which suggests he never had the infection in the first place.
Wow, that's a direct contradiction to the bioresonance diagnosis.
It is.
So now Lukasz has these two completely different sets of results.
Yeah.
One saying he has Lyme disease, the other saying he doesn't.
Right. And that can be incredibly confusing, especially for someone who doesn't have a medical background.
Yeah, you'd be left wondering who to believe, what to do.
Exactly. This discrepancy even caused some tension among the investigators.
Oh, how so?
Well, one of them felt like it was pointless to keep investigating.
Because there was no physical evidence to support the bioresonance findings.
Yeah, they felt like it was a waste of time and energy.
Okay, but the others, they wanted to continue.
Yeah, they argued that maybe there were other factors at play.
Like what?
Well, they talked about the possibility of extrasensory phenomena or some kind of unknown mechanism that science hasn't discovered yet.
Hmm, so they weren't ready to completely dismiss bioresonance just yet?
No. And they felt like some kind of clinical testing could help shed more light on the situation.
Okay, so what did they decide to do?
Well, they decided to design a small experiment to specifically test the diagnostic abilities of bioresonance.
All right.
But they wanted to minimize the influence of the placebo effect as much as possible.
That makes sense. How'd they do that?
They decided to focus on something objective, something that could be verified.
Okay.
Allergies.
Allergies.
Yeah, they figured they could test Biocom's ability to detect known allergies in individuals.
Okay, so they recruited people who already knew what they were allergic to.
Exactly. And they had medical documentation to prove it.
Okay, so that eliminates the subjectivity of self-reported symptoms.
Yeah. They got 10 participants, each with their own clinically confirmed allergies.
Okay.
And they enlisted the help of Tomáš Ondrejka, a skeptic, and Danka Vardyová, the therapist who had tested Lukasz.
Okay.
So the protocol was this. Danka would test each participant using the Biocom, but she wouldn't know who they were or what their allergies were.
So she was blinded to the information.
Yeah. And the investigators, they would be there observing everything, recording the results immediately.
To prevent any potential bias or manipulation.
Right. Now, there was one limitation.
What was that?
The allergies being tested, they had to be ones that Danka had vials for.
Okay, so the device theoretically had the information it needed to detect those specific allergies.
Exactly. So with all these precautions in place, they ran the experiment.
All right, drum roll, please. What were the results?
Not great. Across the 10 participants, there were 47 clinically confirmed allergies.
Okay.
Bioresonance detected 10 of them.
10 out of 47?
Yeah.
That's a success rate of, let me do the math, just over 20%.
21% to be exact.
Wow, that's not good.
It's not.
Yeah.
One of the investigators said it was basically like random guessing.
Yeah, that doesn't exactly inspire confidence in Biocom's diagnostic abilities.
It doesn't. Now, Danka, the therapist, she had an explanation for these results.
Okay, what did she say?
Well, she admitted that she wasn't totally on board with the experiment from the start.
Why not?
She said that bioresonance, in her view, it requires a more holistic approach.
Meaning?
You have to consider the whole organism, the whole person.
Not just isolated allergies.
Right. She said that in this experiment, the device might have been picking up on other more pressing issues that needed to be addressed first.
So it's like the device has its own internal logic, its own way of prioritizing things.
Yeah, that's what she suggested. And she maintained that in her regular practice, where she uses a more comprehensive approach, the device is 100% effective.
That's a bold claim.
It is. But she couldn't really explain why it performed so poorly in this controlled setting.
Right, which is a common issue when trying to scientifically evaluate alternative therapies.
Yeah, the practitioners often argue that a controlled experiment can't capture the nuances of their real-world practice.
Yeah, I mean, it's important to acknowledge that this single experiment doesn't definitively prove that bioresonance is ineffective in all situations.
True.
But it does raise some serious questions.
It does. I mean, a 21% success rate, that's not encouraging.
No, it's not.
And it's something for people to consider if they're thinking about using bioresonance.
Yeah, it's definitely a red flag.
Now, we also have to acknowledge the placebo effect again.
Right, because even in a controlled experiment, you can't completely eliminate the power of belief.
Exactly. And this experiment, it was designed to minimize the placebo effect, but it's always there lurking in the background.
So more research is needed to really understand how much of a role placebo plays in bioresonance.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, good quality clinical studies on bioresonance are few and far between.
Yeah, which makes it even harder to draw firm conclusions.
It does. Now, Danka, the therapist, she did say she'd be willing to participate in more experiments.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. And she expressed frustration that skeptics don't often observe her regular practice.
She feels like they're not giving it a fair chance.
Yeah, something like that. But on the other hand, the skeptics, they express frustration that medical professionals are using a method that they see as unscientific. Expert speaker.